Okay, good day, everybody. This is Jim with OptionProfessor.com, and basically we are here today to learn more about advanced strategies on options. Before we get started, I just thought I'd give a quick overview on what I'm thinking out here. Again, what I'm going to be doing today, very clearly, is sharing my opinions and my observations. And just as a disclosure, with short-term trading, options trading, there's a substantial risk of loss, and it's not right for everybody. And I always tell people, consult their brokerage firm, their broker, to find out their own suitability on what option strategies, if any, might be right for them. And of course, past performance is not indicative of future results, and use risk capital. Okay. With that said, let's go on and see what we're going to cover here today. Now, on the screen, I've got the S&P 500 index. I'm going to give an overview, and then we're going to go into the option strategies. Quick overview. I do this every week on my weekly update that I publish and send out for people to read. Is basically, I give an overview on what's happening in the stock market, what's happening in the bond market, crude oil, the U.S. dollar, the bond market, of course, and then, of course, the gold and silver and agriculture. So I give a wide variety of information there, and it's free of charge. At the end of the broadcast, I'll explain how you can get on the list and receive it every week. Now, let's talk about the stock market. Okay, and then just a quick background on myself. I'm a graduate of Boston College. I've been doing this investment business for decades. I have been trained in options at the Options Institute in Chicago. And basically, I've conducted hundreds and hundreds of seminars, both live in hotels, as well as at money shows, as well as at the Zoom that we use now, and that type of thing, for thousands and thousands of investors. So in my opinion, what this all means is that I'm qualified to explain the uses and risks of options. I'm going to do it here today. Okay, but let me give you a little overview on what's cooking here. The stock market, as you can see, I'm going to be using a chart here that gives you the 1 year, the 2 year, and the 3 year moving average. I like to use these because it gives me a better idea of what the main highway looks like. Then, of course, you can trade against the main highway with shorter term strategies, right? Okay, so let's get a quick overview on the broad based index. The S&P 500 obviously peaked out around 3,400. What were we saying at that point? Our opinion was that this market was a joke up here because of earnings were not anywhere near justifying it. And then many indicators were just telling you that this thing was petering out. The advanced decline line was totally not confirming it. The VIX was very moderate, very complacent. We also were very far away from the moving averages. And when that occurs, the likelihood of a pullback to the moving averages, in our view, is very high. The Russell and the Dow Jones transports were not making new highs. So we had about 19 million, exaggerating, but we had a lot of indicators, telling us that this thing was not going to continue. And of course, GDP was not kicking in either. So you didn't have any reason for it to keep going other than, some buying going on or short covering or somebody's getting squeezed out. So you're up here at 3,400 and then bam, it comes down. Once it breaks under 3,250 or 3,200, that was a signal that it was breaking. And as you notice, when it bounces back up here, it's having resistance in that zone right around 3,250. Okay. Then, of course, when you start breaking the moving average under 3,000, then you go into the abyss, right? Because you have as I was warning, ETFs were tremendous amount of money in there by the public, right? And when they all want to come out and there's no buyer on the other side, which there wasn't during that panic in March, you're going to get a big, big collapse. And that's exactly what happened, as the amount of people coming out of ETFs was so tremendous that nobody's on the other side. Then, of course, when they hear that the economy and everything's going down, you're going to find the bond market getting people who don't want to buy bonds. And all of a sudden, you're seeing a collapse in the high yield market. You're seeing a collapse in muni bonds because the cities and states are in big trouble. You see them in investment grade as well, because it looks like all boats are going to get sunk. And that's why the Fed has to come in. So the Fed comes in after we get down to 2,200. Why would it have stopped at 2,200? I'll tell you why. Because these are the former highs over here from 2015 and 2017, right? So you bounced off of the former highs, because former highs are called support once they are broken. So we came down to 2,200, and that was an excellent place to stop. And it was an excellent, once you hear the Fed's involved as far as printing money and you remember 2008, you obviously want to be buying. And during this big collapse, there was such a huge acceleration of selling. The advanced decline line was ridiculous. It was a panic, and it was the VIX went to 90. I mean, come on, you got to know that that's the end. So the bottom line is that the Fed comes in, everyone everyone is out, the vacuum is done, and obviously who's left after everyone's gotten banged out. You've got short covering, you've got spec buying, and then you've got rebalancing. What does that mean? If you're in a fund that's 60% stock and 40% bonds, and all of a sudden, because of the stock collapse, it looks like 40% bonds and 60% stock, you know, it looks like it's reversed. Well, they got to buy stock to balance it back out. And that's another group of buying. And of course, there's no sellers left because you've already got all the sellers out. So of course you're snapping back. Now, I don't know this for a fact, but let's be honest. Do you think the Fed and the Treasury, Mnuchin's been around a long time, and Powell used to work at Dillon Reed. You don't think they look at moving averages and can see that if this market stays under the moving averages like it did in 08, that's what Powell's saying. If this thing lasts longer, then we're going to have years of problems. Because look, here's 2008, and it took out the high again in 2013. That's 5 years before it got back to the high. They know that. And they can also see that if we had a problem of it, we see a problem of it being violated here in 2016, but they did things to get it back up. And then we saw back in the fourth quarter of 2018, what do we have, a 23% drop? They could see that. Boom. They stopped raising rates, right? Okay. So now they see it way down here and they're going, well, we got a choice. We can either make this 2016 or 2018, or we can make it 2008. Now, I want to get elected in November, right? So what am I going to do? Am I going to worry about the budget deficit, which is not my problem after November if I'm not elected? Or am I going to print every dollar I can? And because it's a panic, the Congress will go for anything we say, and we'll work around the 1913 Federal Reserve Act by going into this one section of it and saying that under circumstances, we can set up these facilities. And they got 11 facilities that they can loan money to the Federal Reserve. And then Mnuchin, as the Treasury guy, he can set them up. He's from Goldman. He's a private equity guy anyway. He knows how to set up stuff, right? And the next thing you know, you got 11 programs going. You got the Fed pumping all kinds of money in there, and they get it back above 2,800. And that's why that 2790, 50% retracement, is such a big number, okay? And so they got it back above 2,800, and that's your buy signal. Because once you get back above the blue line, then it starts looking like 16 and 18, right? And maybe even down here to 2012, okay? So the bottom line is you've got the green light right now as long as you stay above 2790. On a short-term basis, you know the former highs up here. You see that high there? That's around 2975. You see that high around here? 2975. This pullback we recently saw? Right around 2975, right? So the bottom, well, there's the low of the month. What's the low of the month? 2965. Why are we bouncing out of there? Because these were former highs, and what? Former highs, after they're broken, become what? Support. Now, obviously, it really got broken down here big time, but this was what? This was the car breaking down. No money, no liquidity. Well, we got liquidity now. We got so much liquidity that people don't want to go back to work because they make more money sitting at home than they do going back to work. Now they're coming up with some idea that they might have to pay people to go back to work. Give you a bonus. Hey, come back to your job. I'll give you a bonus. And how much between the PPP and the $600 more unemployment gives you? I mean, you know, there's money floating around here. Lots of it. See, the total income hit is supposedly about 10% because what? 70% of the people who've lost their job make less than 40 grand. So the income hit to the economy was only like 10% because it is mostly low income people that have lost their job. And so they've replaced that income. How? By PPP and putting $600 more into the account than normal on the unemployment. So they haven't skipped a beat on, and that's why in May, during a very bad period, we saw personal income rise 11% with 40 million people unemployed. How the heck could that happen? Well, because they're handing money out like candy. All right. So basically, I'm thinking that as long as we stay above 2790, which are here 2766, which is their low for May, as long as we can hold above there and keep these moving averages matriculating to the upside like they did in 16 and 18 and 13 or 12, then you're in pretty good shape. If they start rolling over and we break under 2800 and this red line, green line, and blue line start rolling over, then I think that the valuation guys like Cooperman and guys like Buffett, who haven't really done a whole lot of buying, because they're the value guys. We're at a tug of war right now. You got the quant guys like Tom Lee of Fundstrat and Kalanovic over at JP Morgan, the guys that are looking at how much under participation there is in this rally, meaning many active managers are underinvested, which means they could still come in. $5 trillion money, dollars in money market could still come in. $2 trillion in private equity can still come in. And only 18% in one survey I read think that we're going to have a V-shaped recovery. So this is not a heavy believer deal. There's still plenty of people that can come in. So the bottom line is that what? As long as we can stay above 2790, we're in good shape. In the short run, as long as we can stay above 2790, 9.65, you're in good shape. If they start breaking under these numbers and you see these averages turn over, then it's a game, set, match as far as the Bulls are concerned, as far as I can see. Now, let me tell you the couple of things that concern me, because, you know, I am generally positive and I'm generally thinking, well, because I'm not fighting the tape, you know. I'm not Kreskin or a Karnak the magician, you know. I'm following the tape. So the bottom line is the tape is telling me you still should be in. You break under 27.90, you know, that changes the tune. But here are two things that I'm concerned about, and let me show you. Let me see here if I can get this thing up here. And then I'll get into the strategies. I want to give you an overview, though, on where we're at as far as my opinion and my observation. Okay, the transports. You know, you're going to see here that there's a reason to be worried about the rally, okay? That's why, you know, having some hedging tactics we'll talk about and some type of trailing stop or something might not be a bad idea. The transportation, and this chart's going back. Come on, we're talking 20-year charts here. This is not a day chart. Okay, so you can see here that this market, when it goes up, the S&P, it generally has the transports involved. Then it goes down in 08, okay? Now it goes on a big run. Are the transports involved? Yes, they are. Then it has a pullback. Then we have another run. Transports are involved. This is 2018 up here. This is where the transports peaked. Then we had a drop in December. Remember December of 18? Okay, now we come back up. S&P goes to 3,400. That's a brand new high. What does the transport do? Can't make a new high. That's telling you non-confirmation, okay? And then we go into the soup. That's a big one, right? Stopped right around that low. Maybe a good reason for that, right? Right around that low. Now we've come back, but we're still having a trouble with these moving averages. And they've crossed to the downside. That's worrisome to me. And that's why I'm not fully invested in this thing yet, because I want to have a ripcord to pull if this thing starts looking bad. Getting under 29.65 would be bad. Getting under 27.90 would be really bad. And I don't want to be caught fully invested up here if this thing's going to roll over. And the transports are telling me that that could happen, because the transports came up to their averages, right? Look where we were in June. We went to 10,096. Well, look where those moving averages come in. 10,148, 10,000 on the left screen there, 10,164, 9,804. We're trading, this thing dropped 1,000 points off of that thing or more. What, 1,200 points it dropped off of that thing, right? So obviously that's resistance. You don't have to be from Harvard to figure that out. And you're trading 91.67. So it's not even getting back up there yet. That's a cause of concern, my view. We get back above 10,000 and start cooking, then I think it opens the door for 3,500, 3,600, 4,000 on the S&P, because then you could take this high out and then everyone's on the train. That's concern number one. Let's talk about the transports are things that are moving, you know, moving products, moving people, you know, transportation. You know, if the transports don't believe it, it ain't happening. My view, Russell 2000. That's why you got to be careful. You know, if you just listen to TV, you know, they're only going to tell you what's going on right that second. You know, sometimes you got to look at other signs to figure out what might be, where's the puck going, right? You ever heard of the Wayne Gretzky idea, right? Don't tell me where the puck is. Wayne Gretzky, you know, he wants to know where the puck's going. Well, that's why we use some of these charts to try to figure out where that might be. All right, now this is the Russell 2000. Let me get that back up on the screen properly. Okay, the Russell 2000. Small caps, right? Small caps. Let's get this thing going. Here you go. Same story as the other, as the transports. You see? We go down in 08. You see? This is 08. Boom. Now we go on a rally. Who's involved? Transports are involved. Russell's involved. Then we have a drop. Transports making new highs up to 2018, right? There you go. September 2018, right there. That's the high. Then we have the drop in December, right? December 2018, big drop. Then we're back on the bicycle again, right? But do we make a new high while the S&P went to 3,400 on a new high? No, we didn't. And that was your tip, that it was a Fugazi rally up to 3,400, not confirmed by transports, not confirmed by here. Same deal, into the soup big. Where did it stop? Kind of where the transports did, near a low, right? So the low is a nice low to have, no doubt about it. But we've come up here into that resistance zone. Look where the moving averages are. 1484, 1523, 1525. What was the high this month? 1540. You penetrated it. You breached it. That's not bad. That's good. Problem is after you breached it, you went into the soup and you went all the way down to 1318. You lost over 200 points on the Russell this month from the high. And now we're at 1422, well underneath the moving averages, which are crossing. See the 1 year? The 1 year is underneath the 2 year. The 2 year barely is underneath the 3 year. We get back above 1525 and 1540. That's going to be a great sign. So keep an eye on 10,000 on the transports and the Russell at above 1540, this month's high. And then you could have some confirmation again that we've got a lot of runway here. Otherwise, guys, is this telling us, similar like it did up here in February, that we should be concerned because this rally does not contain the small caps and it does not contain the transports? And then maybe we're going to have a problem. What could the problem be? Unemployment stays very high. The consumer, what, doesn't spend. Don't forget, he's coming out. The consumer's now going out there after being 3 months locked up. He's going to be spending, spending, spending. What'll happen when he turns around? He says, my job's not coming back. What's going to happen if these guys pull that $600 that ends in July? What's going to happen when, a second wave maybe hits? Again, these are very much unknowns, but the news goes both ways. And the Russell and the transport have me concerned. And who's talking about that? Not many people. Like I say, you got a tug of war going on about people like the quants who are talking about, look at, how big we're going to get a snapback. Things are going to come back much faster. And again, these have been true. You know, we reopened the economy in May. A lot of people were saying it wasn't going to be to August. That was very bullish. People are spending money, you know, that's good. But we have to see if this is just a burst that's unsustainable or if it's a situation where it's going to continue. And if it's going to continue, I would imagine the Russell and transports are going to break their highs and then you're going to have confirmation. But if the cards go the other way and all this enthusiasm from the people that are talking about, oh, there's a lot of money on the sideline. Hey, who's to say the sideline money is going anywhere? You know, a lot of people who have money are older. Maybe they don't like their account going up and down 30% every year. Or you know, look, we've had what? In 10 years, we've had 2 crashes. You know, if you're 60, 65, 70, 75, and you got money, maybe you're a little tired of that volatility. You're not going to put the money back in. Rather just put it in tax-free bonds at 3% and say, forget it. So again, there's no assurance $5 trillion in money markets coming back in. There's no assurance of anything. And so, these people, these value people, Buffett's not buying anything. And a lot of these other value guys aren't, because how do you figure out what something's worth if you don't know what the earnings are going to be and the company is not forecasting earnings? You don't. And if you can't forecast what the value is, then you're buying blind. You don't know what you're buying because you can't valuate anything except maybe the fangs. That's why the fangs, everyone's running into the fangs. At least you know they're making money. We know Microsoft's making money. We know Apple's making money. We know Google's making money. We know Amazon's making money, right? You know Facebook is making money. And that's why those stocks are outperforming. So anyway, that's my view. That's my thoughts. And again, I keep you updated every week on my weekly update, which is free of charge to get. And I'll talk to you at the end of the broadcast. And I do analyze not only the stock market, but like I told you, the other markets as well. All right, let's get into the options, which is what we're here for. With regards to, what I'm going to use here as an example, to tell you how long I've been doing this, when I started doing these seminars, the big stock to use every time was IBM. That tells you how long ago I started in this thing. IBM is the forgotten company. But now Apple is pretty much the IBM or the lead dog, right? And it's trading 351 right now, okay? Now there's the chart on it going back 20 years. Obviously, it's just been a moneymaker and bad-mouthing. Apple is like bad-mouthing Santa Claus, right? But I'm going to show you option strategies around this stock. And now again, these are going to be theoretical examples. They're not recommendations. They're just showing you how the tactic works, the use and the risk of the tactic. Okay. All right. Now, for those of you who have a lot of experience in options, you already know how the options work. Call option, when you're buying a call option, it gives you the right, but not the obligation to purchase at the strike price, 100 shares for a certain period of time. That's called the expiration. And on the put, if you buy a put, you are going to be having the right to sell, but not the obligation at the strike price for a certain period of time. That's again called the expiration. Writing the option is you're just taking the other side. So the option buyer has to put up the premium and the option seller receives the premium. I'll go into different types of writing strategies in a moment, but I just wanted to give you a little quick view on that for people who are just starting out and have showed up without a lot of background. How about pricing of options? Where do they get these numbers from? Well, again, there are three basic areas where the option price comes from. One is called the intrinsic value. Now, I'll give you what that means as an example. The stock right now is trading 351 on my screen. Let's call it just round it up, 351. So if you're looking at a 350 call right now, and I'm going to be using September options, which expire in about 92 days as an example. They go off the board September 18th, 2020. So again, and these prices were from a while back, earlier today, so they're not current, but they give you an idea. All right, so anyway, you're at 351 on the stock. If you're looking at 350 calls, they are in the money by a dollar, and they were trading for 24. So they have an intrinsic value. That's the difference between the strike price and the current price, which I'm saying is 351. They're worth a dollar, but they're going for 24. So they're only worth a dollar intrinsically, which means real, but they're going for 24. What's the other $23 come from? Well, it comes from two things. One is called a time premium, meaning you're going to pay for what what? For the time between now and September 18. And then the other part of it is a little bit difficult to quantify, but it's called volatility value. Now, this stock has gone nuts on the upside. So these calls would be, let's put it this way, they price option on what has happened. They don't price it on what they think is going to happen. Okay. Now, what has happened here is a very volatile move. So this is like a Ferrari. You're going to have to pay more price for a Ferrari than a VW, right? In other words, something that's not moving very much is going to have a lower implied volatility. So the premiums are going to be tighter because the volatility part compartment of the option is going to be what? Less. So right now you're talking about premiums that are going pretty good for this kind of a stock. Okay. Now you can see by the graph here that this stock is breaking into new highs. And so where's it going? God only knows, right? Because it's in new high territory. So you can't really calculate too much resistance because it, you know, it's bursted through resistance. But what you can say to yourself is how far above the moving averages are they? And that gives you a little bit of an indication of how far it is from the averages. So right now we're at 351 and the averages come in at 271, 231, and 210. That's what these red and green lines and blue lines. So you are 22% above the one-year average, 34% above the two-year average, and 40% above the three-year average. So, you know, you can see like here in October, it looks great. And then bam, it's back to the number. You could see it looks great. And then bam, back to the average. So these averages are no joke. Sometimes these markets that look great, they go back to the averages. And that's why you got to be careful when you get to higher prices. And there are different strategies to consider when you're at this level. Okay. Now, there are lots of strategies, difficult to go over all of them today. So I'm going to go over a few of them so you can get a little idea of different strategies. What would I be thinking about up here? I would be thinking about how I can, say I bought it down here at, during the crash, or even bought it a year ago, right? And it was in the 200s. And now I'm up here. I'm up 50% of my money, right? So I'd like to make sure I don't go home and have this thing go back to this one-year moving average down to 300 or something like that, right? Or 270, okay? So here's the deal. If you want to do some protecting of your assets up here, there's a couple of strategies you could take a look at, okay? One is called covered call writing. Now you're at 350 up here, right? The calls going out, and that's all according where you think the market will go. Do you think we're at the high here? Then you might want to look at a 360 call, which is going for $19. If you have a pen and paper, you could write down some numbers just as theoretical examples. Right now you're at 360 on the call, right? And you're going to say you sell it. You own the stock. Let's say you own 100 shares. 100 shares, you do one call. You sell it at 360, you get $19. That's $1,900 in your pocket. It gives you a downside hedge because if the market drops and the time runs out, the option will go to zero and you'll be able to keep $19. From 351 minus 19, you're going to be looking at being hedged down to 332. So your equity is protected down to 332 between now and when? September 18, when the option goes off the board. Do you want to have a higher ceiling than 360? Because once you sell the call at 360, that's going to be your what? Your ceiling. Plus the 19 you paid. So 360, you got paid. Plus the 19 is going to give you 379 on the upside. So what's your window? If you do a covered call at 360 right now, it limits your upside to 379 and it gives you downside hedge to 332. Not bad. And that's if you think that window is appropriate for the summer. Is that a decent window for the summer? Some people, would prefer to have more downside hedge. So then you sell an in-the-money call like a 340 or a 320. If you sell an in-the-money call at 320, it's going for $44. What are you signing up for? You're signing up to sell your stock at 320 with a premium of $44. That gives you upside to 364. You think there's much real estate beyond 364 this summer? If you don't, then that's a reasonable thing to do. Downside hedge. You got 44 points. It's at 351 minus 44 gives you downside hedge to 307, pretty close to that 300 number. So your window there is 364 and 307. That's if you were obviously a little bit more like it might roll over. Others might even want to go further in the money, like 300 calls. Again, this is for somebody who thinks the upside's not that great and wants to obviously hedge themselves. The 300 calls are going for $59. If you sold a 300 call and got $59, your ceiling is at 300 plus 59 or 359. So you'd still have about $8 on the upside of potential. Okay. And on the downside, 351 minus $59, you'd have a downside hedge to 292. So a covered call, right, can be an out of the money call. It can be an at the money call or a little bit in the money, or it could be a deep in the money call. You'll have a ceiling and you'll have a floor while these options are live. Okay. Now, there is a way of adjusting your position if you find out the market is taking out 355, let's say. I'll give you a for instance. If you are in the stock at 351 right here and you sold a call at 360 for 19 and it goes up to 360. Well, or say it goes up $10 to 361 and it happens, you know, over a bit of time. It's possible that the 19 you sold it for could go up towards where the 350 is now, which is 24, which means you sold it for 19. And if you bought it back at 24, you'd lose $5. Now the underlying stock has gone up 10. So you're still net ahead, but you may want to rewrite something. So you would buy back the 360 calls and maybe sell the 380 calls, which might be going for 15 now. Well, if you had a $5 loss on your option and you brought in at 380 another $15, $5 pays off that negative and you still have a $10 credit, which brings your ceiling up to 390. That's called rolling up your position. And that's the way people adjust their calls if they think they may have sold a call and they want to open the ceiling up. Again, the risk of that is that if the market rolls over, you now have taken a loss on your call and now you're losing principal on your stock. And the one you wrote at 380 does not give you as much protection as the original one gave you at 360. So yeah, there is no free lunch in these things. You know, when you adjust the risk, you also adjust the return in risk as well. I mean, excuse me, when you adjust the option, you also are going to be adjusting your risk reward. So, you know, that's a covered right strategy where a guy owns the stock and is selling calls against it. Maybe if you're looking to get into the stock, you know, for the first time here, maybe it's not such a bad idea to just go with a buy right out of the chute. And then at least if you sell a 360 call for $19, you can make all the way up to 379. So you certainly have plenty of upside, but at least your downside is going to be protected to 332 between now and expiration. So, I mean, for a guy entering the market here at these lofty levels, he might feel better with that type of what? Protection. So covered call writing doesn't have to be done after it's run up. It doesn't have to be done because you know, have owned the stock a long time. It could be done right out of the chute. And obviously with this kind of a situation where you're talking about 350 and you can see the chart, and obviously, you know, it's obvious that this stock is very powerful and it's on its way someplace, but it's also vulnerable to what? News changing. And maybe if that Dow transports and that Russell is telling us that this thing can't go on forever, and some of the news that's going on turns, you know, this would be one of the ones that maybe people would take some profit on. And going back to these highs here of 327 or the low of May, which was 285, you know, maybe that's not so far-fetched if the news changed. And we don't know what the news will do. We do know one thing. This is a powerful company with a lot of great balance sheet, and people have been flocking to it as a safety trade because they think that obviously these guys are going to continue to make money with their AirPods, which I just bought for my son, and the i10, 11, whatever, which I also, for his graduation, got him. So, you know, I'm a consumer for them. I understand, you know, that their stuff is popular, and I understand that it costs money. So, and they also have a lot of cash. So, you know, this is a great company, no doubt about it. But even great companies sometimes have pullbacks if the news changes, right? So, again, that's the covered call writing situation. The other thing you can do with a company like this up here is you could consider a collar. Now, a collar means you're going to try to set up a situation where you still have upside. I mean, anybody who owns this stock probably thinks they're probably going to keep going because obviously if you've been doing this well with something, you certainly feel good about it. Not only that, you know, there could be tax situations you have to consider with these things as well. That's a factor that I'm not talking about today, but you'd have to look into as well with your brokerage firm and whoever, your accountant. So anyway, let's see here. A collar strategy. We're at 351. Let's say you want upside potential to 370. That means you're going to sell the 370 call. You're also going to buy a put at 330, which goes for $15. Now, what can you do there? You can, what does that do for you? It gives you upside potential to 370, but you're going to take the $15 you received and use it to buy the 330 put for 15. So it's a wash. You made 15, or you didn't make, but you got paid 15 on the 370 and you used it to buy the 330, which means what? You bracketed your equity. So until these things go off the board, you've got upside potential to 370, which is $19 from where we are now, and you've got downside risk to 330, which is $21 lower than we are now. So you've bracketed your equity. You know what the maximum it'll be between now and September? And you know the worst it could be between now and September. Some people like that. Then they go to bed at night. They know what their equity is going to be for the next 90 days, one way or the other, if they hold it till expiration. Now, maybe you want to tighten that window up because you think, hey, maybe we are near the high. So you take a 360 call and you go $19 and then you buy the put at 350 for $23. So it costs you $4 to have what? Insurance at 350 minus $4 or 346. And it gives you upside potential to about 356. So that's somebody who wants to tighten the window quite a bit. But a collar strategy strategy, the idea there is you're going to sell a call to generate cash. So you could buy your insurance with somebody else's cash. Now, you don't get it for free because you are capping your upside wherever you sell the call. But guys who have, you know, $1 million in this thing, who think that that looks like a high price, you know, may consider something like that. Because again, if you do the one I talked about, 370 and 330, you still got another $19 on the upside. But if the thing starts falling apart, at least at 330, you've got a line in the sand. You've got a floor. It's not a stop loss where you have a stop at 330 and it gaps down to 280 and they fill you at 280, you know? So the collar strategy, you know, can be a very effective strategy for people. And it's the combination of selling calls and buying puts. And obviously, when you look at a chart like this, as good as it looks, you know, this is where people might start considering, some type of hedging tactic, which is what collars are. It's a hedging tactic. Covered call writing, it's an income cash flow creating strategy. You know, when I started in this thing, covered call writing was supposed to be used for what? Doubling your dividend. If your stock paid 3% dividend and you could bring in covered calls to make another 3%, that was the objective. With the volatility we've seen, I mean, look, you know, come on, in the years that have gone, as volatility picked up, come on, it's gone nuts. Why has it gone nuts so much? I think it's because the Fed's balance sheet has exploded, and money supply has exploded, and the debt has exploded, and of course, because there's so much money floating around, companies have been able to, obviously really grow their own balance sheets, and so I don't think it's coincidental that, the market was fairly stable, higher, and then it goes nuts. And I think it goes nuts because obviously the amount of money in circulation has gone nuts and, you know, incomes and wealth has gone nuts. And so obviously the prices have followed suit. But most of these companies you'll see the volatility since 2000, which is when they first started, in my view, 1998 with long-term capital management. That's when they started the idea of printing to help the economy and help the stock market and help value, you know, asset bubbles, that kind of thing. Yeah. All right. So we went over how to hedge up here and we went over how to do some cash flow creating. And now I'm going to go over strategies called iron condors. Iron condors are basically where you're going to do a credit spread above and a put spread underneath. So we're at 351 on Apple. And if you want to do an iron condor, what you could consider doing is something like this. Say you sell a call at 380. And let's say you sell it at 380 and you sell it at $11. Then you buy a 390 call for $8. You get a $3 credit on each contract or each spread. It's a credit spread, right? You're selling a call at 380 and you're buying one at 390. You're selling at $11. You're buying at $8. You're going to get a credit of $3. You've got a ceiling at 380 between now and September. On the downside, well, let's see what you'd do there. Let's say we'd want to put the floor at 300. Okay. Let's see here. Yeah. So you put the floor at 300 and then you're going to sell the put. So when you do this, you're selling a put. Let me get the screen back up here. I decided to update, I guess. Hold on. Yeah. So you're selling a put at 300. That comes in at $8. And then you buy the 280 put. And let's say you get $5. Again, that's a $3 credit. So you're going to get $300 on the upside. And you're going to get $300 on the downside on each spread. That's $600 total you're trying to make. Where is Apple? It's at 351. How would you be successful here? You'd be successful if time would run by 92 trading days and Apple never got above 380 and never got underneath 300 and both options would expire. All the options would expire at zero. Okay. So for people that are neutral, say they think we're going into a trading range, that might not be so crazy, right? Because obviously we've had a big run and the news could, you know, just kind of stall out for the summer. Maybe there is no big wave, but maybe there's some. Maybe there's no big consumer move, but maybe there's some. Maybe the market has discounted a lot of good news and it stalls out because it's already discounted the news. But there's no bad news and the money starts coming in off the sideline on any dip and ergo you end up with a range of 380 and 300. Is that impossible? Not impossible at all. And that's why that strategy might be worthwhile. Now, let's talk of, and you know, again, we're using this as an example. These strategies are applicable to anything. Okay, let's talk about how do you get in trouble here? Well, let's say the market jumps up at expiration. You do nothing. You do because you can always get out of these things. You can cover them by what? You know, obviously liquidating either side or both sides, right? In other words, if you start seeing the market looking like it's going to go up, you could always cover, meaning if you've sold the 380 call, you'd have to buy that back. And if you bought the 390 call, you'd have to sell that out. That's how you liquidate the spread. So say you sold the spread at what? 3 and you bought it back. back because it started to spike up on you, and you bought it back at 6. If you hold the other side, the put side, where you have a 3-point credit, and it expires, even though you lost double on the upside, the 3 there can help pay for the loss, so you come out flat. Worst case scenario here on the upside, if it goes to 390 and you hold it all the way to expiration, the maximum the spread can get to is the difference between the two strikes, which is 10 points. So if it goes to 390 or better and it's at expiration, the intrinsic value is the $10 minus the 3 that you got. So 10 minus 3, you're going to lose $7 on that. If it's at 390 or greater in September, you lost 7 because 10 minus 3 is a $7 loss. But you would pick up the 3 from what? From the put spread. And the $3 credit minus the $7 debit would give you a loss of $4. On the downside, same story. If the market starts going down and say your $3 spread jumps to 6 and you buy it back, you took a loss of $3. But if it never goes to 380 and the time runs out and you get to keep the $3, that $3 would offset your loss in that example. Now let's say we get a real tank job and it goes under 280. That's a $20 loss minus the 3 you received is a $17 loss. And then let's say you kept the $3 credit from the call spread, that brings it down to a $14 loss. That's why these iron condors you hear can be dangerous. I just gave you an exact example why it would be dangerous. If this market were to have a big drop, and that's not unheard of, basis where these moving averages are, obviously you were trying to bring in 6 points and you went out losing 14. So again, during big drops like we see in March, people who are doing iron condors probably got whacked very hard, as you can see. Okay. So again, you know, that's a strategy that's floating around out here. And, you know, sometimes I hear I'm doing iron condors and I've won 8 times in a row and 9 times in a row. Well, if you get whacked one time, you can take away all your gains and then some. So that's why you got to be careful with all these strategies. Know the use, know the risk. Don't go in there because some guy on the internet or some guy with a Ferrari on TV saying he never loses. You know, this is why you got to be careful, because there is risk on all this stuff. And I just showed you an example where iron is not so iron and condor flies away if it does make a volatile move one way or the other. And your window, because of the premiums, are wide, because on these spreads, your maximum risk is the difference between your two strikes minus your credit. Now, you may say, and I might tell you, that many times, I don't know statistically, but many times it's possible that it never goes to the full fruition of the spread. But if it happens once, that's enough, right?
Right.
Okay. So there you go on the iron condor, playing both sides of the market. What else would I consider if I was an Apple? I told you if you wanted to enter the position, you might consider entering in with a covered call right away. You might enter the position with a collar right away. And you also might consider if you thought the market was neutral, you know, the iron condor strategy. But again, you saw that there could be quite a bit of a loss if there is a big pullback. Now, what about put writing? Okay, let's think about that. Another way to enter the market. This is all about entering the market. If you thought the market was good up here at 350, but you don't want to buy at 350 because you can see the averages are way underneath, but you love the company and you'd love to take it in, but you'd like to maybe buy it at a lower price. Well, here's how you try to buy it at a lower price. You see the number $3, 300, right? Say you thought, well, you know, here's what I would consider. Since our moving average here is at what? The 1 year is at 371, okay? And the low of, this is interesting. If you felt like doing it this way. The low of May was around 240. So it's all according how aggressive or conservative you want to be. You could do a selling of the put. Now, I'm talking about cash puts, which means what? You've got the money in your account to buy the stock if it's put to you. When you sell a put, you're agreeing to buy stock. So if they knock on your door and they say, hey, the market went down, I'm putting stock to you, you don't want to get a faraway look in your eye. You want to go, thanks, and here's my check, right? So this is where you have the money in your account to buy the stock. So let's say a fairly conservative way to do it would be to start with this low of 240. The September 240 puts are going for 3. If I sell a put at 240 and I get paid $300 because it's 100 shares of contract times $3, that's $300. Now, 240 minus the $3 I receive, I'm actually agreeing to buy Apple for $237 between now and September 18 when the option expires. Can I live with $237? Do I have the money in my account to do it? Then it could be a good deal. Now, what could you do? That's if you just sold the put. And I'll tell you how it works. If the market rises, you keep the $3. If it goes sideways, you keep the $3. If it goes down, you keep the $3 unless it goes down to what? 240 and they exercise you or less. Okay. So two out of the three things that are going to happen is a winner, and down is a winner as long as you stay above 240. And why did you pick 240? Because that's about the low of May. May. April. I'm sorry. April's low. Okay. All right. Now, what can you do also? Here's another thing. You sell the puts at 240 and you get paid what? We said $3. You could take that premium of $3 and you could buy a 420 call between now and September. What does that do for you? It gives you the right to buy at 420. If you're willing to pick up another $3, you could buy the 400 call for $6. And therefore, you took the three that you got on the 240 and you either do a wash deal where you buy the 420 for the same money. And now if the stock goes to 460 or something crazy, you know, as we go into September 18th, you're long the stock at 420 and that option at 240 will go to zero. So you'll keep that money. And you got a free look at what? The 420 calls. Or if you're willing to put up $3, you can buy the 400 calls, which go for $6 for essentially $3 when you use the credit of 240 to pay for half of it. Okay. That's a way to play it. If you want to play it that way, what's your risk here? Again, 240 is where you've agreed to buy the stock. So it's not going to be 237 because you spent the premium. It's going to be 240. Can you live with $24,000 worth of Apple? Because what's 240 times 100? I think it's 24 grand, right? There you go. All right. Now that's, you know, playing it a little bit safe from the standpoint of what? You're pretty far out of the money on the put, right? Hey, let's move it up here. Let's say we move it up to where the lows were of May, which was 285. So let's go 280. Here you sell the 280 puts for $5. Then you can buy the 400 call for $6 and only have to put up $1. But let me walk you through it again. You're selling a put at 280 because it's underneath the May low and you think this company's good, okay? Or if you want to use the 200, the one-year moving average and you don't think it'll break that, you sell it at 260 because it's at 270, right? So bottom line is if 260 is going for about $4. So you got $4 at 260 or 280, you're getting $5. Either way, you're either agreeing to buy at 280 minus $5, which is 275, which is $27,500 on every contract. Or if you spend the money, you're agreeing to buy $28,000 worth of Apple, and you're going to buy a call with the $5, which means you could probably buy the 410 for a flat, or the 400 and put up $1, something like that, or the 390 and put up $3. Okay. Now, if you go with the 280, if you go with the 260 because you want to get it underneath the 1 year moving average, you don't think it'll break. Yeah, you bring in $4. You could buy the 410 call for $5 and get actually a credit in this theoretical example, and then basically you're long the stock with the call, and you've agreed to buy the stock if it goes down. So selling puts underneath the market and either agreeing and just keeping the premium, you know, I mean, this has not been a bad strategy if you look at this stock. You know, you were down here at 100, you could have sold the 90 puts. It goes up to 120, you sell the hundreds. It goes up to 140, you sell the 120s. It goes up to 220, you realize how far it away is from the average. The best time to sell the put is obviously on a drop, because if it drops down towards one this number and this number and this number, these puts are going to be huge, and that's when they make the most sense. When Boeing dropped from 400 or 300 down to 90, you could have sold the 65 puts for $15 and agreed to buy Boeing for like $35 or $40 or something, you know, or $55, whatever, or kept the premium. But you could also have done this when Boeing was down to 100. You could have sold the 80 put for $20 probably and bought the 150 calls. And then when it goes up to 230, you make a home run on the 150 calls and you didn't even use cash off the sideline. You used the premium to pay for it. And now that 60 or 80 put that you sold is, you know, obviously if you did it with a 2 month or 3 month option, you would have kept the premium and you would have made a home run on the call. So that's what a good example of. When these markets have corrections, sometimes that's the best time to play this game. And what is the game called? Writing puts and using the premium to buy the calls. What's the risk? When you write a put, it's always you got to buy the stock at the strike. If you've taken the premium and spent it, then obviously the strike is where your risk is to have to buy the stock. If you don't, you can always just keep the premiums and play the market all the way up and maybe use a trend line like the 3 year moving average, the 2 year moving average, and the 1 year moving average as your get out point. Get out means you can buy back the put at any point, plus or minus whatever you sold it for, and then you negate the trade. You don't have to hold these things till expiration. You can trade them. But certainly selling puts after this crash down to 2,200, you know, I mean, this thing, you know what the puts on this thing was in March when we went down to 220 from 320? What do you think the 180 puts were going for? 40? That's a good classic example. You have to know the strategies. You have to know the plays. You know, I come from a sports background. That's why I love this stuff, because this is all about plays. And every play has a risk and a reward, right? And that's why if you come from a sports background, this stuff is right up your alley from the standpoint of I'm taking a risk when I run this play and I'm ready to take that risk. But I know I'm going to win if it happens and the play works. But money management, risk control, that's the game. And how do you figure that out? You have to have lines in the sand. You have to have some discipline. discipline. You have to know where you're at, worst case scenario. And basically that's when the knowledge of the strategies comes in very, very handy. You know, time has flown by here because this stuff is a lot of, in my view, it's a lot of, you know, a lot of, very interesting, a lot of fun, very exciting, particularly when you can use options rather than options use you. You know, everybody hears the word options. What do they hear? It's a gamble. It's a big, of course it's risk in it. No doubt about it. But there's also ways of using it to actually reduce risk or change risk. And that's what people don't know or talk about. They just talk about, oh, yeah, you buy a call for a dollar and Hertz goes up to six and I made all this money. That's casino, right? But then some of the stuff I'm talking about is using it as risk management. And I think that's really what's helpful. And of course, decades and decades of doing it and being, just studying the stuff all the time. You know, obviously I have a pretty good background on how these things work. And obviously I've seen many, many cycles like that Charles Schwab commercial where he's talking about 1937 and how the markets go up and down over the years. Believe me, you know, that happens. And, you know, sticking with certain strategies with discipline does make some sense. But again, things do change. And that's why having strategies and knowledge to adjust to the changes and also change your risk on each strategy, you know, is very important. I'm going to be around later today for a panel discussion, I guess, that happens in a little bit. I did want to close up by thanking everybody for being here. If you'd like to get my weekly update, which is free of charge, so obviously it's a no-brainer, you simply go to optionprofessor@gmail.com. That's optionprofessor@gmail.com. And I'm more than happy to share my opinions and my observations on the stock market, the bond market, which is obviously very exciting for people as well, because, you know, they have to try to find yield and they, you know, they got to, I mean, that's a big thing. That's a whole nother seminar. Then you've got the U.S. dollar and international markets, which I give an overview on. And then, of course, I go over different sectors that I find interesting. And then, of course, we go into things such as crude oil and the gold, silver, copper. And we go over things in the agricultural sector, just giving our views and our observations and our opinions. So you could put it into your think tank if it is helpful. You know, hopefully it will be. And again, I try to give you all the information I can and all the experience I have, and free of charge, ain't a bad price. So again, it's optionprofessor@gmail.com, and just simply send your email in there. We'll put you in the queue and you'll start getting it every week. Again, thank you very much for being here. optionprofessor.com and optionprofessor@gmail.com. I'm going to turn it back over to David and Anka.